the multifunctionality and the flexibility of these retrofits has to be taken into account. Something we have to think also, not only the performance, because as we see, the home has changed into an office, but it will not only change into an office, it will also change according to the composition of the family.
Hello and welcome to Inclusive Urban Futures. I'm your host, Ordner Rosenfeld. Inclusive Urban Futures brings together world-renowned leaders, experts, and practitioners in a mission to ignite creative discussions and explore emerging questions on what inclusive future of cities can be. Hello and welcome to this episode of Inclusive Urban Futures. Today, I have an immense pleasure to speak with Carlos Ochoa, Building Energy Senior Researcher at International Energy Research Center in Ireland. I call Carlos the Engineer of Light. And I believe that his work in building energy and energy efficiency is critical at this time. But what is the link between energy efficiency and inclusion? I invite you to tune in and listen to our conversation with Carlos and discover how these two concepts connect and how they can be achieved together. You're a widely published author in the field of energy efficient buildings, intelligent buildings, building retrofit, near zero energy buildings, whose work has been widely internationally published and quoted. And your professional personal story is inspiring, and I would just like to give our viewers and listeners the opportunity to hear from you and maybe to also to learn from you. So why don't we just start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, Orna. So my name is Carlos Ochoa. I'm an architect by profession, and I have been studying about intelligent buildings since my postgraduate studies. I come from El Salvador, where I was born. And then I went all over the place, let's say. I went to Israel to do my master and PhD. Then I went to the Netherlands for a postdoc. And then after a while, I returned back to Israel for professional reasons, and then moved to Ireland, where I'm currently working.
When I'm reading through your papers, something came up to me, and I thought you're an engineer of light. In fact, that you know, in terms that you deal primarily with facades and envelope of buildings, and how light can be used either for comfort or heat or beauty. How do I understand your background correctly?
Yes, that's right, Orna. Yeah, the facade is one of the most important parts of the building. And it also, apart from giving the identity, it filters out what happens between the inside and the outside in almost every sense, the environmental, the personal, because it divides the inner from the outer world of every occupant. And then it also provides the identity to the building. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the most important sections that must be studied.
Right. And how did you come? I mean, architecture is such a broad field. How did you come to dedicate yourself and your professional work to the facade, to the skin of the building?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very interesting subject. It had been calling my attention since I always like all these items about flexibility and change. So it's part of maybe my personal quest.
And why the facade? Why light? And how did it change actually over different, like you lived in three different continents. Mm-hmm. How does it change? How does the skin of the building, you know, this outer envelope and a light change?
Yeah, it's a very fascinating subject because it's the most tangible and identifiable part of the building. So also that brings us that it must not be something that we leave as an afterthought, but it must be something that we plan for the occupants. Most of the subject I've been dealing with is the facade as a second skin, something that can actually breathe, can provide protection to the occupants. So it helps to transform a building from something inanimate into a living object, if you want to see it that way. Then, of course, we have these constituent elements, energy, light, that are closely related, and they provide comfort to occupants if we manage them correctly.
I think that in one of your papers, actually, you're exploring the thermal comfort and aspects of affordability to the occupants themselves.
In that sense, comfort has been almost overlooked by many architects until now, because they have been trying to be more into the formalistic aspect, such as to make something that is unique, but that uniqueness can come at the expense of the occupants, who are the ones that will be complaining from being inside that building.
That means that to make a outstanding design.
Yes, that sometimes it can go against logic, because maybe the architect has that type of design prerogative, but it's not fair to sacrifice the user as an afterthought, just because this designer wants something that stands out from the rest of buildings.
Very much. Well, I think that most people don't know the nature of your work. And as you said, this is often overlooked, most important, but overlooked part of the building. So could you tell us a little bit more to the broader audience about the facade, and what is the detrimental part of not taking part of the taking care of the facade in the way you describe to the inhabitant?
What I can say is that the facade is the one that collects all the inputs from, for example, from the environment. And it can then make overheating or be badly insulated. So then in winter, we have a thermal discomfort. People feel cold. And in summer, people might feel too hot. Mm-hmm. And for this, to avoid this, we have to choose adequate materials. And this adequateness depends on the specific context and location.
There has been a lot of discussion now about retrofitting buildings, especially in the political arena, especially right now in the European Union. That is one of the most important programs at the time, at this moment. How do you look at this problematic? Because from my understanding, you look at retrofitting of like insulation, but you actually examine light. To my understanding, a step forward, looking at the source of heat, which is natural, which is sun. So could you tell us a little bit about that, of like maybe reflect on this policy kind of initiative on the EU level, and tell us your perspective about it? What is positive about it and what is still missing perhaps?
Yes, the European Union has taken very correct steps towards acknowledging the problem, because most of the building stock is old and inefficient. So therefore, we have to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And one of the best ways to do it is through retrofitting, which means that you change certain components of the building. Maybe you leave the core, but the rest of it is transformed and upgraded. So this upgrading gives you the opportunity not only to make it look better or look like new, but also to perform better. And this can be done through considering, again, the climatic variables, such as the temperature, the relative humidity, the availability of sunlight, so that efficient technologies can be implemented through them. Mm-hmm. So one of the challenges of this renovation is the large number of buildings. So therefore, we have to take into account how to speed up this renovation. There are different ways. One is through industrialization, the other is through participative design so that the occupants come with the solution that they can take. So these are aspects that should be considered as well.
And you have worked on three continents, to my knowledge, and maybe more. I just wanted to know how your work changes in different climates, mm-hmm. and also on working on these three different continents, what is the achievement that you're the most proud of to improve the outer skin of our built environment?
Yeah, I would say that. To try to work in different climates, you try to keep the principles of mm-hmm. climatic design, which is how to keep an indoor environment that it's suitable for most of the occupants. And then you develop strategies around those principles. So obviously the outcome will be different in a cold climate than in a warm climate.
And can you name the continents where you worked?
Well, in my native El Salvador, in the Americas, then in Israel, which is in Asia, and then in Europe.
So both in continental Europe and in Ireland.
Yes.
Yes. And what is the achievement that you're most proud of, or perhaps discovery that you're most proud of?
Well, perhaps I would say that it was about my doctoral degree and the development of these methods for designing the intelligent facades, mm-hmm. which I think has laid a foundation for different work that came afterwards.
You know, the 2020 has been a year like no other. So I just wanted to see how and if, what were the challenges that you would like to highlight in terms of your profession, and what are maybe the breakthroughs that happened because of the crisis? So how and if at all this change in the work-life balance influences your work? I mean, will it become, how will it change, the uptake of, what you produce on your end in terms of intelligent facades or facades that are really better, that protects us better?
Yeah, I think the focus will be more, and this has been overlooked for some time, more into the home type of universe and space that so far it was always like, let's do intelligent facades for office buildings because they are expensive, because they are massive. Yeah. But then when you have people that are working for longer times in their places, then you come back and see how protective is this facade from the building. It can be from a standalone home or it can be an apartment.
I understand. And I mean, to what extent will standard retrofitting that is being now, pushed and financed, I mean, to what extent will it answer the question?
I think the multifunctionality and the flexibility of these retrofits has to be taken into account. Something we have to think also, not only the performance, because as we see, the home has changed into an office. But it will not only change into an office, it will also change according to the composition of the family. For example, children grow, children marry. Mm-hmm. So there are changes.
Here I wanted to ask you what kind of flexibility you meant. So this is the flexibility of function.
Yes, the function, mm-hmm. which can also be reflected in the facade. Mm-hmm. Because maybe you need more light for your workspace, and perhaps less for the more private spaces.
Could you tell us a little bit more about that? Mm-hmm. I mean, are home facades intelligent enough?
At the moment, not much. because they are very static. They do not adapt to the changes in the weather. They do not adapt to climate change. Mm-hmm. So we also need to think about this. And also they only reflect some sort of traditional prototype.
And if you're talking about intelligent facade, can you tell us a little bit more about it? What is intelligent facade that you said that was primarily put on offices until now? How is it different than a facade that we know in our homes? Where are we missing out?
Well, for offices, it has always been a matter of trying again to conserve energy, to keep energy expenditure down. So you can have, for example, photochromic windows. That means that they change from light to dark. Maybe you have some roller blades that are activated by sunlight to prevent overheating. Maybe you have also movable insulation that changes according to the weather. So these systems are expensive. They are quite sophisticated. So that's why bringing them to the home sphere, it's not that easy. And also there has been sort of a fear by manufacturers to try to make this product accessible because they don't know if they will sell it well enough for houses. But even though I have to say that there are also other new elements, even if they are not part of the facade, which is, for example, the Internet of Things, like thermostats that are offered by utility companies that are smart enough, and they can be controlled by the telephone, can be controlled from any computer around the world that has access to it. And they can also control, for example, your lights, etc. So the concept of the smart home is emerging, even if for now it's just a lot of connections rather than using it for a strategy of intelligence in the home as a living being that is intelligent.
I understand. So, I mean, to my understanding, in our home design, in terms of the facade and what facade can do, by retrofitting and insulating, we're just doing the mere first step.
Yes.
I worked a lot on affordable housing, and now there's much discussion about how, because of the movement of the population and less uptake of office space, especially in central business districts, that more and more people, you know, will be working from home, but more and more office buildings that might have intelligent facades might be left unoccupied, and maybe that there is a potential of turning it into affordable housing. And I understand now from you that the cost of these intelligent facades that might actually sometimes span 20 stories, is higher, and it doesn't ooze affordability as a message. So how do you see this trend from your perspective? What are your views on it?
Yeah, I think change of use might be also a strategy to revitalize certain city centers that have fallen into disrepair and abandonment. So in a way, you will also need to retrofit these intelligent facades for a residential function, because it can be a case that it's a very a largely glazed building, so it's incompatible with current housing expectations where you need privacy.
You mean that the office space that is our architecture we kind of advertised for since the 90s, the transparency, or
yes,
transparent models that you can light from inside and basically can see through floor to ceiling glass windows, right? Mm-hmm. And that is something that would need retrofitting. And yeah, I think that that's an excellent point, because many people who were talking about the possibility of making these big office buildings now into housing, or let alone affordable housing, I think that, you know, kind of overlooked that aspect of actually having to retrofit a facade that was expensive to start with, was intelligent, but it actually is not really fit for use for housing, and let alone considering the price, affordable mm-hmm. housing, right? In terms of policy development in your field, I just wanted to ask you, what are the advances that you see and that you would like to highlight as very, you know, positive and that you encourage in? And I would also like to ask you what you personally think is still missing.
Well, I think in terms of policy, in the context of Europe, it's important that the European Union is promoting the renovation wave, because it also acknowledged that this problem needs to be addressed in a wider way, not only country by country, but at the continental level. What also needs to be addressed, I think, it's the way to access the finance so that people can do their retrofit and not to wait for government programs to start it. Because also people need to be satisfied and they need to be motivated to do it. And I think in this way, right, it's encouraged to do this.
And can you tell us a little bit more about that point of where you said not to wait? Because right now what we have seen is many governments, and I thought that was a very positive development during the COVID crisis. A number of European governments actually approved and provides funding or finance for retrofits, right? I mean, we can start from France. I mean, that was one of the latest things that have passed and really, really alignment with this European cause of retrofitting and climate proofing the continent. So can you tell us a little bit more about this idea of actually accessing finance and being encouraged? What is this still missing, according to your opinion?
Yeah, I think we also have to clarify that government intervention will be needed, because you have, for example, apartment buildings that you cannot wait until all the inhabitants go to buy their new retrofit kit, because there could be a time that you have 5 years and it's not completed, etc. And then you don't have any gains from this type of intervention. But for example, for individual homeowners, it's a better way that they are motivated to get into this type of renovation.
And this is where you're saying that still, that encouragement and access to finance that is maybe not from the government is still something that is not as much developed as you would like to see.
Yes, because also, first of all, the cost of the retrofit is significant. So it needs to be amortized in an offset in time through, for example, the energy savings that you will have. But then, of course, for this, we have to have enough technologies at a suitable price that it becomes more of a mainstream activity of renovation.
I would just like to move on to this idea of inclusion and inclusive urban futures. I mean, what can we learn from your professional and personal experience? And I think that I would like to start with the very open question asking you that inclusion is really wildly discussed concept right now. I mean, it replaced integration in a way. It is very much widely discussed as an aspiration in both policy and business cycles, especially now in the view of COVID-19. What does inclusion mean to you? When we say inclusion, what comes to mind? What is your interpretation?
Well, for me, inclusion is that everybody, despite their background, is being taken into account and that they have an equal opportunity to participate.
Mm-hmm. And what is your view on the current state of art of inclusion?
Well, I think it's beginning, because it's not also that you change a mindset overnight. Mm. And also we have to remember that since the 80s and 90s, there are these initiatives of equality, of diversity, as you said, and now it's inclusion. Mm.
And what can you tell us? I mean, life in three continents, I think what I counted four countries, mm-hmm. and maybe I'm missing one. What can we learn from your experience as an international expert or someone who not only was in these countries as an expat, but like somebody who chose personally to work and
study and research in different countries and in different continents. What can we learn from your experience of kind of changing worlds?
Well, what I can say is that you have to learn from the national cultures of each country. Mm-hmm. You also have to take them into account, respect them in a way, mm-hmm. and then, of course, adapt to each of these cultures without losing the personal identity, which mm-hmm. I think is important.
Mm-hmm. And what is still missing and what could be done?
Missing, we still have a long way to go, but I think that's part of the nature of human beings, that they come together as groups. So obviously they might not accept at once the person of another group, but then we have to try to promote the acceptance in a way that is also respectful.
So going toward the end of our conversation about inclusive urban futures, and I think that we learned a lot from you already, I just wanted to ask if you could, if you wanted to communicate one important message about your work to inclusive urban futures audience, what would it be?
Well, it would be that we need to take into account everybody in terms of users, in terms of human behaviors, that we also need to take into account what people need, but not to be with a high nose saying that we know everything, but to actually talk with the people that we are serving through our studies so that we have a more complete picture of what is the reality.
Thank you very much, Carlos. It has been a great honor and a great pleasure. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks to you, Orna.
You were listening to the podcast, Inclusive Urban Futures with Orna Rosenfeld. Please stay tuned for the next episode.